Welcome to our monthly call. Say hi to my mom. There's my mom.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm visiting her in New Hampshire. And so look, fingers crossed that the internet is good because we're kind of near a hospital and they tend to turn off the internet. But welcome. And there were a few questions submitted, but they were submitted a little while ago. But there's a lot of them that I've been meaning to get to. So we're going to have some fun tonight. And we're going to talk about decluttering. We're going to talk more about feeling versus thinking, or just feeling in general. And the big one is we're going to talk about confidence. So many people that come to my ski camps, you know, when I say, what are your goals? They say, I want more confidence, confidence, confidence. I would say one out of three people come wanting more confidence. And the two out of three that don't say that are probably thinking that. So we all want more confidence. And I would say that you've come to the right person because I definitely have a lot of confidence. I probably have too much confidence, but I don't think most people have that problem. And then if we have time towards the end, we're going to have more, of course, on fear. And all of this is, of course, tied to fear as well. Everything's tied to fear. Life, you know, is tied to fear just every moment of every day. As always, best to just listen, and then I'll give you time to answer questions, and I'm also going to facilitate some sort of experience for you. Let's start with decluttering. And one of you guys submitted the question. It wasn't a question, it was more a statement. And it is, decluttering my life is still my focus now. She wrote, still my focus now, right? So double entendre, I don't know what that is, but she just said, speak more about that. And I am a good person to ask about decluttering as well, because that's what I've been doing for the last 2 years since my husband decided to leave and my cats died and my mom got sick, now she's doing fine, and my other mother died and all of these things. You know, it's not just, you don't just declutter because you're house is a mess. You declutter for a lot of other reasons. And I find that there are two ways to declutter. And the first way that most people don't think of when they think of decluttering is by decluttering your mind, you know, by organizing your mind through, say, therapy or something. And when you do this, what I've learned is whenever I used to go to a therapy session, I don't go to therapy right now. I speak with Donnie, and I have a Enneagram therapist. But whenever I would go to talk therapy, because it would help me understand or organize things in my mind, the first thing I would do when I got home, and I didn't even realize I was doing this, is I would go home and just naturally like declutter my junk drawer or do the dishes or vacuum the carpets. So it's interesting when you declutter your mind that you just naturally declutter your house. Now, voice dialogue, what I typically facilitate for people, because I'm not a therapist, I'm more of a facilitator. Of course, during these monthly calls, I'm not facilitating voice dialogue a lot, but I think if you're on these calls, then you've probably been facilitated by me in voice dialogue. It's not therapy, but it's close enough. And it's, I always say that it's a great way to compartmentalize your life, like the 10,000 voices, like, okay, this is what this voice has to say. And this is what this, it's like, if your mind is the junk drawer, and there's 10,000 things in it, and you start to just organize and kind of see them like, oh, let's put this one here, and let's put this one there, then you naturally declutter your mind. I find it's actually the best way to just become organized in your own thinking, and your own way of being in the world. And then just naturally, like I used to be a lot messier, but now that I do a lot of voice dialogue, and that's really my practice, my house is spotless. There are no junk drawers. Everything has its spot. I'm really good at finding things. So that's the first way that you can declutter, is just to declutter your mind. Or the second way, reverse it, right? The opposite, instead of decluttering your mind and then you just naturally declutter your home, you declutter your home and you just naturally organize your mind, right? Or you organize your life. And for me, that's really what I spent the last 2 years doing. You know, I didn't do a lot of therapy when I was going through my dark night of the soul experience. What I did instead is I remodeled my house. I organized my house. I organized my life. I worked from 7 a.m. to midnight, 7 days a week. And all I did was organize, get stuff done. The word declutter eventually was able to kick in once the house was finished. And I got such immense pleasure out of putting things back in shelves where they needed to go. You know, there's the book, The Life-Changing Art of Tidying Up. It was life-changing. Now, I would say that if you're asking about, oh, just cleaning up the house, that's one thing. But I don't think that the person that submitted this inquiry was talking about that. But if you are looking to organize your mind, your life, your house, or whatever it is that you want to organize, and you don't know where to start, like you think of hoarders, right? What do they always say? I watch that show every once in a while when I'm in a hotel and I have cable. You know, I find it fascinating. They don't know where to start. And the therapists in those shows always say, well, just start with cleaning up one thing. You know, just pick up something from the pile and organize it, right? Throw it away or whatever. Now, that's another conversation about they have a really hard time throwing things away, but that's not what we're talking about right now. But what I am talking about is where do you even start? Where do you even start? You know? And I would say that if you're not in the mood for the time and expense of therapy, or even working with me privately or all of that, and I wasn't in those 2 years, especially because there was COVID going on. And I just really, my practice of recovering from my dark night of the soul experience wasn't therapy, you know. I actually decluttered my house. I organized my house. And that's what organized my mind. And that's what helped me through a very difficult time. So again, you have two choices. You can either declutter your mind and then your house gets naturally decluttered, or you can declutter your house and your mind naturally gets decluttered. The two choices, right? Which works better? I think they both work great. And I love this topic because I just read something, and every once in a while I read something that just really sticks with me. I think in the last week I read something where if you're struggling and you're going through a difficult time, or you've been through some sort of trauma and you don't even know what to do or where to start to feel better, just start organizing your life. Clean the junk drawer. Ugh. Clean the junk drawer. Say that 10 times fast. And you just feel better and you start to heal. Any questions?
This is Amy. Liz might say more about this, but she put in the comments that this is her question, and she was asking about time decluttering.
What about time decluttering? Say more.
Hey, Kristen. It's true that, like, thinking over things and putting them, I mean, I think that way too. I know what you mean. Or organizing things where you're in your space, they lead to it. But I guess I'm trying to focus more on doing important things first. I mean, that's like the common thing you'll be told. And it's just like, but always a struggle, and I've got to do it, you know?
Or
so that's what it is.
And this might be the conversation that leads us back to core values, at least temporarily. You know, Donnie, my partner in core values, her number one core value is workability. Somebody else's may be order. And for people for whom workability or order is their number one core value, they don't have a problem with clutter. You know, their house is spotless. Why? Because it matters to them. It's like oxygen, right, to them, and food and shelter. I mean, it's just their whole world. But if you don't really care about order or decluttering, it's like not even on your top 100 list. You know, at some point you might be like, oh gosh, this is such an energy leak. But it's also a matter of like prioritizing things that really, really matter to you. Now, if you have a partner for whom their number one core value is workability or order, and you just could not care less about it, that's another question, conversation. But when I talk about core values and I outline priorities, what comes up for you, Liz?
You know, we have talked about this, and I guess I still think novelty seeking is my top thing. And my husband, I was, you know, maybe it's not his top thing, but efficiency, it's his top thing that I most often notice and think, well, there are other ways to look at this. But as far as order, I wouldn't say we're actually that divergent. It's more that I find myself doing, you know, so many things around the house when maybe I should be focusing on projects and things that ultimately will make my life better.
A quote from your perspective.
What was that?
That I'm... that was a room conversation.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So whenever I hear the word, I should be doing something, it tells me that... I don't like the word should. Does that make sense?
I don't like it either.
Right. And so for me, I feel like the question that you're asking isn't how do I declutter, but how do I navigate a marriage with a man for whom efficiency is really important when what matters to me is novelty? Is that really what you meant to ask?
I don't think it is, actually.
Okay. What's the deeper question then?
The deeper question is that it really is what I'm asking. I find myself doing things that aren't as important. I just spend a lot of time on logistics, I guess, of living. And, you know, yes, I do travel a lot, and, you know, life is good, but I'd like to focus on some of my personal projects, and I find it hard getting that space in a day.
Right, and it's hard to get started, is what I am hearing you say. Once you get started, though, do you finish?
Sometimes.
It ties in, of course, with last month's talk, as you mentioned, procrastination. And definitely refer to that talk. And for me, it's if it's something that I should do, that's an energy leak, that also affects somebody else's life and their happiness, and it's like it's like nagging, you know, it's like a monkey on your back, just constantly nagging. I call them energy leaks, where like up to maybe even 90% of your life experience is just feeling guilty that you haven't done the thing. And another week goes by and another week goes by. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. You know, in some ways, yes. And energy leak is a great way to put it.
Right. It's just...
my energy is escaping in a cloud of steam. And, you know, then when I have no steam, I just need to crash.
What I have done... And I don't know if this is Zen or not, but I made a list of I think there were 7 things, like taxes, for example, a letter that I had to write that was going to be very unpleasant, that I'd been putting off for months, but it was an energy leak. Like all those things that I didn't want to do, I made a list of them. And I thought, well, I just want to do one a week. And I got started on one of them. and I finished it within like 3 hours, and it was so rewarding. I did two more that same day. And I don't know if that would work for you. And I'm not necessarily in the business of giving advice, but that would be my advice to you, is just in the words of Nike, just do it. You know,
it is true that you get on a wave and it rolls.
Right. And it does. And it just, it feels so good. And so, I mean, the reward is just the, like, I mean, I slept so good that night. I felt so satisfied with my life, but I really, my core value is accomplishment. You know, mine isn't novelty like yours. So it's up to you to really take into consideration your core values and just cut yourself a break and just do it. Maybe, yeah. I imagine sometimes what my teacher, the Zen master I worked with, would say. And I think that in this moment, he was just like, well, just do it. Next, right? And he'd ask for the next question. So sometimes accountability helps, like, you know, send me $1,000 if you don't get it done within a week. Sometimes that incentivized people, right? It just, find the thing that's gonna incentivize you. I had a therapist one time said, either start journaling or the next session's going to cost $1,000 an hour. I'll bet you better believe I started journaling, right? So just find the thing that works for you. And I don't want to spend the whole night on this, obviously. And I mean, we could dig in deeper to what is holding you back. Well,
maybe we could all just think, what would be a, what should I find that would incentivize me? What do you think? And you could put it in the chat. How about that?
Perfect. And maybe something that would incentivize them will incentivize
yes.
you. Okay. And keep in mind, though, everybody has different core values. And I mean, like, Donnie's incentivizing is just like, it makes her feel so good to declutter. It's like food to a starving person, you know. There's nothing she would rather do than clean the house, because that's her core value. So keep that in mind.
Right.
All right, let's move on. And if you have any questions at the end, I'll stick around afterwards and we can keep talking. All right, next. So I wanted to just go back into feeling, because in the month before we meet, every once in a while, somebody will say something and I'll be like, oh my gosh, that's so great for Tuesday nights. And Michael Jennings, who's on the call, right, said something to me in the last month that like blew my mind. I wrote it down. I've written it down everywhere. And he said, a direct quote, they don't know they're not feeling. So thank you, Michael. And I realized that for me, feeling is very easy. And for other people, they think they're feeling, especially if they cry a lot or they feel a lot of fear or they just have an anger issue, they feel like they're feeling. But usually what they're doing is they're resisting the feeling, or they're in their heads trying to understand it or trying to control it or get rid of it. And when you're in your head, there's a lot of judgment because there's a lot of dualism. But when you're in your body, you're in your body and just feeling, right? It's very simple. Things become very simple. And it becomes a very present moment. Because when you're in your body, the body doesn't think, doesn't know past or future. It just is. And people are always like, oh, I just, instead of doing, I want to just be. It's like when you're feeling, you're just being. You're just being in the moment. And if you have intimacy or no judgment or just connection with that feeling, then you're having a spiritual experience. I don't think many people have that experience. Like Michael said, they don't know they're not feeling. They think they are, but they're not. They're thinking about feeling, or they're thinking about their emotions. They have feelings about the emotions, which are actually thoughts. You know, what is the difference between an emotion and a feeling? Well, I would say the emotion is the emotion itself. It has no judgment. But when you say, well, what are you feeling? It's the mind's interpretation of the emotion. So it's like, this is the emotion and this is your mind. The feeling is in between, you know? And so, and when I ask people, what are you feeling? I watch them, they look up, they're like, well, you know, it's like, well, feelings are down here. That's how I can tell that they're in their heads, right? Tricky and clever, right? So people don't know that they're not feeling. Have a moment right now, or they don't know that they're not feeling. And really check in to see if you've ever just felt, like without interpretation or thought, your emotions. Do that now. You know, it's interesting, my mom is here and I've never seen her cry. And she talks about how when my dad died, they were married 50 years, something like that. And she didn't cry when he died. She was there with him. And I don't think that she knows that she doesn't feel. But do you? Sorry, Mom. Just, we did this before, we did 3 months series of getting out of your head and getting into your body. So this is like 3.5 now. Just spend a moment in no mind. Remember how we finished last month? No mind feeling. Feel whatever you feel. Don't search for it. Just spend 30 seconds feeling. Maybe you're hot, maybe you're cold, maybe you have an emotion. I feel a little tension back of my neck, my throat. I'm a little sick. That's what I feel. Maybe you feel the floor under your feet. Feel the air on your skin, the clothes touching your body. Any comments or questions? And of course, in order for me to ask that, immediately I go back into my mind. You do too, and the moment's gone. Any questions about that? They don't know they're not feeling. I'm glad nobody's piping in, because it's kind of a beautiful moment and we ruin it by asking questions because we're back in our heads trying to understand something. Okay. I should have ended with this. Let's move on to confidence. Got to shake ourselves out of that. It's really, really beautiful. It's like time stand still when you're just in the business of feeling. And that's ultimately what I'm trying to get people to do with their fear. They don't know that they're not feeling their fear, Michael, right? Okay. Confidence. We're going to shift gears and go back into our heads. So, always the question is, how do I find confidence? And the experts, you know, I actually Googled it. Like, what do people, experts, suggest that you do to gain confidence? Go back into your mind and listen to what I'm going to say next. And I promise we'll bring us back to that same place at the end. Well, they start by saying, don't fear, right? Overcome your fear and anxiety. Say, like, I can do this. There's nothing to be afraid of. So that's how you have confidence. Just get rid of your fear. The second thing they experts suggest is to avoid reassurance seeking. Michael, are you listening? Avoid reassurance seeking. Like, for example, other people saying, you're amazing. Your mom saying, you're amazing. You got this, right? That is not what's going to give you confidence, because you're borrowing somebody else's confidence, you know, and you're just looking for validation to boost you up. And it's just not, you can become reliant upon that, right? You can become reliant on reassurance. The third thing is they say, avoid second guessing yourself. It's kind of like, if you say, oh, I'm an experienced writer. Well, I guess I am, sort of, like in an interview. I mean, I do write a lot, but I don't, you know, I don't have as much experience, say, as you. Like, imagine somebody said that in a job interview, they wouldn't get the job, right? So starting with the I'm an experienced writer, period, right, is what the experts are suggesting, like speak with authority and get rid of the second guessing. The next tip, the fourth one, quit hiding from what you really want, is what they say. Like, get out there basically and take risks. Figure out what you want and go after it. Fifth thing they suggest is speak in a confident way. Like, I've got this. You know this one, right? Like, I'm going to be amazing out there. Six, stop criticizing yourself after making mistakes. You know, like if you screw up the speech, or if you blow the first date or whatever, or if you had a difficult conversation with your boss or your colleague, walking away going, oh my gosh, I so screwed that up. Like, stop doing that, right? Don't criticize yourself anymore. The seventh thing the experts say is also stop dwelling in the past mistakes. Like, oh my gosh, the last time I talked to my boss, I really screwed it up, right? And getting in a loop about dwelling on the past and all the things, all the times, many times that you've screwed up. Like Lincoln, I think he failed, I don't know how many times before he was president, right? He didn't dwell in the past, right? You gotta let it go, is what they say. And then the eighth thing that the experts suggest is trust your feelings, like have confidence in your feelings. Now, you guys know what I teach. And as I give you that laundry list of things that the experts suggest that you do in order to have more confidence, you probably know that I'm like, right? Because of the language that they use. And especially this last one, trust your feelings. We were just talking about feelings. And usually it's your interpretation of your emotions, or your interpretation of the feelings, or your judgment of them, right? They're saying have confidence in your feelings. But if you're feeling like you suck at something, or that you have no confidence, if you're feeling like you have no confidence, are they saying have confidence in that? I don't think so. So you know me. Whenever I hear words like stop or overcome or avoid, or instead of that, do this, or quit something, quit doing something, I'm going to seize up a little bit, right? Right. If they're suggesting that you speak with confidence, even if you're not feeling it, you know, like Stuart Smalley, I think it was Saturday Night Live, like, gosh darn it, people like me, and I'm smart and I'm confident, and, you know, and the post-it notes on the mirror. Right? We make fun of this kind of stuff, and it's definitely not Zen. So all these tips and pointers, and there's so many of them, I've only just listed 8 or 9 of them now, I guess, I am not a big fan of. Now, you may think that I'm mad at these people, these experts, or I'm super judgmental or frustrated with them, and you would be right, right? I am definitely all of these things about the people that give this kind of advice, but not for the reasons that you think. This is a really important point, because I really want you guys to understand why I poo-poo so much advice that's out there, because these people are really well-meaning. I am judgmental. I am mad about this stuff, though. I am upset, but only because we need their help in order to learn how to be in flow with everything. We need their help and learn how, in order to learn how to be in flow with the 10,000 voices. We need their help to be just even in level 2 instead of in resistance 2, or don't be this, right? Be that. Like, good luck with that. To be in acceptance of these things. Let's even just start with acceptance. And there's a great quote that I have retained from this last month. It's by Michael J. Fox. I think you guys all know who he is. He said that the more that I accept, the happier I am. Like the more that I accept in my life about my state of, he has Parkinson's, of course, the more I accept my Parkinson's, the happier I am. Well, confidence, we can have the same conversation about confidence. It also starts with acceptance. The more that we accept the 10,000 voices, including the part of you that's not confident, oddly, the more confidence you have. So I just, my seeming judgments against these experts are not judgments so much as just I'm upset because we need their help in order to do this. Because there's so little confidence with people, especially girls, women. It's changing, but we're taking the advice of this, and it's not sustainable, and it's exhausting, and it's tiring. It's just so much easier to just have confidence in the 10,000 voices, including the ones that we typically want to have nothing to do with. So I'm going to lead you in an exercise to take us through, and the only way out is through, into the depths of our lack of confidence right now. And I would say that acceptance is very important. If somebody has no confidence, we start with acceptance, or actually, I think we even start with the noticing. So we're going to do two things. We're going to notice the opposite of these 8 pieces of advice that are really prevalent out there. We're going to notice whatever we notice, and then we're going to accept. Bear with me. You're going to know what this is all about in just a second. But does anybody have any questions before we get started? All right. It starts with it starts with noticing. In the words of the great Zen master, Dr. Phil, right? You can't change what you don't acknowledge, or you can't change what you don't notice. And I would say that the voice of the self is more often than not the witness or the one who's just noticing. Like whenever I do voice dialogue with you guys, when I refer to the self, are you the self? Is the self you? No, but the self is the one that's noticing you, noticing the voice that's speaking, or witnessing, right? Or acknowledging, maybe, if we get to the point where we're now in flow with the voice. So, or accepting, you know, the one who's accepting. So it always starts with just noticing. So the first point that the experts suggest about gaining confidence is to overcome your fear and anxiety. Now, I want you to just notice your relationship with fear and anxiety first. Are you trying to get rid of it still, even though you work with me? And now I want you to accept your fear and anxiety. Just accept it. Just close your eyes if it helps. Do this now and accept that fear and anxiety is a normal, natural part of life. And whenever you're going to do anything with your life that requires confidence, fear and anxiety is going to be there. So accept that now. We're not even getting to embracing or feeling or intimacy. We're just accepting it. It's part of the process. So the second one, instead of you can do this, there's nothing to be afraid of, notice instead the times that you say that you can't do this. Remember the times that you say that you can't do this. Just notice that right now. Can you think of a time in your life where you had that thought? Now I want you to accept, I can't do this. It's just part of life. Sometimes it shows up, I can't do this. I can't declutter my house. So accept, I just can't do this, or I won't do this, or I don't feel like doing this. Spend a moment just accepting. Keeping it tied to confidence, though, accept that I can't do this. So we'll stay on track that way. And if it helps, just repeat it over and over again. I can't do this. I can't do this. Like this thing that you're trying to do, You know, pick something in your life that you've been procrastinating on. And just accept that you've had the thought, can't do this. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. Or it just seems like a lot of work. Or it might not work out. Do I really want to spend 2 years writing a book and maybe nobody buys it? Right? The third one, instead of, in the words of the experts, avoiding reassurance seeking, now shift and accept that you look for reassurance. Just really accept that now. I just want reassurance. I want people to tell me that I can do this. I want people to say, you got this. It's going to be amazing. You're going to be amazing. So let yourself want that. Want that reassurance. Does this resonate with you? Does this feel familiar that you want that? Michael, I know you do. This resonates with you. This next one will be hard. It's about second guessing, right? I want you to close your eyes and now second guess who you are and what you're capable of. Hard. Because how many times do you hear, you've got this, right? Don't second guess yourself. You're gonna be amazing, right? Go ahead and second guess yourself. Second guess who you are and what you're capable of. The only way out is through. Spend a few moments just second guessing yourself. The thing that you wanna have confidence in order to accomplish, just have the thought, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I'm capable. I don't know if I have the skills. I don't know if I have the energy. Accept that second guessing is part of life. Next one. Instead of quit hiding from what you really want, notice whatever way in which you're hiding right now. Spend a moment accepting that you do this. Close your eyes if it helps. Think of the many ways that you're hiding from your greatest potential. And just feel what that feels like. Hide from it. Could just mean that you're wearing a mask. It could mean that you just sometimes don't go on the trip. Don't quit your job to look for something that is more satisfying. Could mean whatever it means to you. Find the part of you that's hiding right now and accept that you do this. Next one, instead of speaking in a confident way, I want you to notice, back to noticing, that you sometimes don't. And I actually really like the moments that I don't speak in a confident way, because it's especially if there's a witness, right? Like if I say to somebody like, God, I just sometimes feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And maybe I'm not as good as I think I am. You know, that's a really beautiful, difficult conversation that I can have with somebody else. And they're probably going to say the same thing back to me because I'm being vulnerable and that gives them permission to be vulnerable. So notice that sometimes you don't speak in a confident way. Accept that about yourself. These are all voices. We're compartmentalizing each of the trouble voices that supposedly take us away from confidence, but we're actually accepting them. We could have also embraced them and have had intimacy with them, but sometimes acceptance is enough. And when you accept that sometimes you don't speak in a confident way, it's like all of a sudden we become Zen masters. You hear Zen masters say things like, well, I struggle. I struggle very deeply. And I really doubt myself. And when a Zen master says it, you're like, oh my gosh, that's so profound. But if somebody that's not a Zen master says that, and you know, you immediately want to say, no, 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 you got this, right? You're thwarting their growth. You're thwarting their vulnerable moment. You're thwarting their Zen master moment. But that's what we tend to do, and that's what people do to us. But if we can just luxuriate in, like, you know, sometimes I just don't feel confident, and I really, really struggle. We're Zen masters in that moment. And then the other one that the experts suggest is taking risks, like this one, like the risk of being willing to be vulnerable and just not feel confident and want validation and want somebody else to be your backbone and all that and all this thinking that feels like it holds you back, but really it's like trying to get rid of it that just becomes an energy leak, exhausting, right? So just notice, like take risks. I'm a big fan of taking risks. When I ended my ski career though, like super confident, right? My whole ski career, confidence. I was tired of being confident. I was tired of taking risks. And I wanted to just sit and be nothing and not take risks. You know, 10 years, I didn't take any risks. I slept. All I did was sleep, right? Maybe went to lunch with a friend, studied some Zen. So I want you to notice right now the times that you don't want to take risks. Is that what you're feeling right now? I don't want to take risks. I don't want to have to be confident. Just accept that that happens. Do that now. And this is the practice in Zen. It's a school of nothing. No goals, no agenda, not steering, not trying to be like, I am confident here, Muir, I don't need your help, I got this. Like, this is more about no control. Nothing to gain. Not attempting to be more confident, but just melting into your lack of confidence and accepting it all. Noticing and accepting it all. And my hope is that in leading you in this, I guess it would be guided meditation, that it's not a painful experience, that it's actually a freeing experience. It's like freedom. And I could do this through voice dialogue, speaking to each of these individual voices, like the one that has no confidence. How does the self feel about you? Well, he hates me. Well, is the self willing to embrace you? It's kind of speeding up the process where we just sit with any part of us that prevents us or disallows us from having confidence and just accepting it all. Now, does this practice of just being one with whatever is allow confidence in it all? Maybe. Maybe not. But it's like I feel like I have confidence in my lack of confidence, oddly, right? For having done this. I want to check in with you guys, and I don't want to presume to or bait you into what I think you should be experiencing. What has this been like for you? Who wants to tell me what this has been like?
I can go. Yeah, I would say it's a bit of a homecoming, settling down of the wheels. Letting myself off the hook. Admitting some things that I didn't know I was even resisting. So unconscious holding, unconscious resistance. Feels like I want to revisit this as a way to just do a check-in, and it's almost like a washing. I guess I think of it as heart flossing, just kind of a flossing of my heart a little bit. Mm.
Yeah. Here's a million-dollar question, Bill. Do you feel more confident for having done this?
I'm not sure I could say that exactly. I'm not sure I would say that phrase, but I don't think I care as much.
I love that.
I'm more home in myself. I'm more comfortable in my skin. I guess I have to be willing to, what it feels more like is if I want to stay connected to this more comfortability in my skin, I have to be willing to risk being vulnerable here. And I think if I could do that successfully, that would build confidence. That, oh, I can live comfortably in my skin because I'm willing just to be honest with myself and be vulnerable here. That feels more integrated than the question, oh, now I'm confident. That feels like it brings me more in my head.
Yeah. Oh, I like, love
this part, like, doesn't even really care that much. You know, it's like, who's got the issue of being confident? I'm not sure that's really my issue.
You know, what's interesting is that a lot of people that are confident, and I'm speaking for myself too during my ski career, they're overcompensating for some fear or vulnerability that they don't want. Mm-hmm. You know, and talk about in my ski camps, the connection between arrogance and confidence. And, you know, like when I hear you talk about how you feel, like flossing of your soul or heart, or, you know, what I'm experiencing in you is like a true grounded confidence rather than a like overcompensation confidence or, you know, like there's always the part of us that is our truth that we hide from people, that we even hide from our partners and our children and the things that are left unspoken and the feeling that we have when we go back to the hotel room after you've done this incredible thing. With confidence, you know, and like the loneliness or that's there, or the tiredness or the, you know, like I feel like my confidence prior to studying Zen was a false confidence. That was an overcompensation confidence. And I feel like the more I practice and the more I go through the dark night of the soul experience I've had in the last 2 years and just become one with it all, I find that one of the interesting side effects of, you know, they say, oh, you're going to learn so much from having your world exploded. I think that I'm going to have a more true confidence on the other side of this because I'm just sitting in the shit show of it all and accepting it all. And it's like you're not even striving for confidence, but then you just naturally achieve it.
Yeah.
Just going with the flow, it's like, where's the river going to take you? Well, to a bigger place. The rivers always head towards the ocean. So.
Yeah, I feel like this process is just clarifying. It just helped me clarify. I don't know how to put it. Things that were hidden in plain sight, like I wasn't attending to, I guess, holdings and resistance. And now going through this, it's like, oh, wow. One of them was, you know, because I was at the, you know, Donnie's seminar, the dynamic I have with my girlfriend. And so one of the things that came to light just in that process we did was, you know, I don't really want to be a trustworthy, connected. I don't want to be like, I don't really want to like attend to her core values. You know, there's part of me that doesn't even want to hold that. I think I can naturally, but there's a way in which I impose it somehow, and just letting myself let that go felt like, ah, okay. That's okay.
Right. Like what matters to you is not my job to
actualize.
It's your job to actualize.
Yep.
Yeah, I love that. And how did she react?
I don't know, because it just came to light right now in that process. Like, oh, wow. Okay, that's present here. It's not always present, but it came to light.
Right, and it's like all of a sudden you have more confidence in your decision. It's like the confidence is, I got this, I'll take care of you, I'll be your man. But it's like the part of you that's like, you know what? No, I don't got this. Can't be your man. And all of a sudden you have confidence to be living in your truth.
Yep.
And we're back to core values again. And of course, your truth is what matters to you.
Yep.
And it's like the confidence to do what is maybe the next level question, like confidence to do things that you don't really want to do with your life because you should, because it'll advance your business. I don't know. It's like, I want to have confidence to do the things that matter to me. And I don't want to have to force confidence to do the things that I don't want to do. Confidence for what, you know? Anything else, Bill? This is interesting.
No, I'm feeling complete for now. And thank you for this tool. I'm going to revisit it.
Okay. Who else? Anyone else? We have a few more to do, too. Why don't we do those? And then you can do another check-in. Oh, Ed, do you have something you want to say first?
Oh, well, I just think it's nice to not really think about things too much. Just, you know, keep it simple. It's just a nice state to be in. I'll say that.
Okay. Does it get us more confident, though? I don't know. Let's keep exploring. All right. So the advice continues, like, stop criticizing yourself after making mistakes is another thing that the experts suggest. Again, stop doing this thing that you do. So just feel into the part of you that criticizes yourself. Notice it. Notice that you criticize yourself. Maybe you do it a lot, maybe you do it not that much. I don't criticize myself very much. Maybe I should. I did when I was married, because my husband was very critical. And so I started believing him. And I think a lot of it was projection. It's like, it's hard to determine which is projection, if somebody's criticizing you, or if you feel somebody's criticizing you, and how much of it is genuine feedback. You know, I'm a big fan of criticizing myself, though. It's, you know, it's like free therapy. But just find the part of you that criticizes yourself. Especially after making mistakes. So close your eyes, think of a mistake that you made, and then think of the self-criticism that came afterwards. And just sit with it, notice it, and accept it. Criticize myself sometimes, and I make mistakes, and I criticize myself when I've made those mistakes. Let's do this in silence. I also said to stop dwell on past mistakes. So I want you to just dwell on your past mistakes right now. Just fully accept this part of you that dwells on your mistakes, and go there now and do that now. Give yourself the luxury of marinating in the dwell. Like, oh. Again, it's the school of nothing to gain, no goals. This is pure Eastern Zen. This is what monks do in a monastery. They just sit and whatever shows up. I mean, if joy, love, gratitude, it's a beautiful day, yeah, great. But if this stuff comes up too, I mean, there's a reason why Zen masters beat them with a stick and yell at them and criticize them, right? This is all helping them learn how to become one with everything. You know, what does the Zen master say to the hot dog vendor? Make me one with everything. So become one with all of the parts of us that have no confidence. And the final thing that the experts suggest is to trust your feelings. Remember that one? It's like, okay, trust what feelings? Only the good feelings, or trust all feelings, trust all emotions, trust all thoughts, trust it all, trust the 10,000 voices, including the ones that we've been exploring. So now, just instead of just accepting them, spend 1 minute in silence trusting them. Okay, trust them, all these parts of you, in silence. Even trust the fear that's associated with all this. So you trust these voices, they trust these parts of you, and now shift and have confidence in them. Trust in them all and confidence in them all. Another minute of silence. Only so much as we can be in flow with these parts of us can we actually have an experience of the other that's genuine, that's not overcompensating. And the Buddha, of course, is a big fan of the middle way, right? It's like, this is one side of the coin that we've been exploring, the one that we're trying to get rid of, but we can't get rid of it. And it's like, this is one leg. This is a better analogy. This is one leg, right? And then there's the other leg that's the opposite of all these voices that we've just accepted, had trust in, had confidence in. Like, they're here to carry me really far. And then, you know, it's if you just try to only have the one leg, you're just going to walk in circles. And it's like, this is going to balance you out. And it's really the only sustainable way to be in the world. I mean, do I have confidence that I can jump out of an airplane without a parachute? No, right? I have confidence in things that I'm good at, that I've, you know, my analogy of stepping out, right? Building my confidence, comfort zone, all of that. You know, if you have confidence that you can give a speech in front of 10,000 people when you've never even spoken in front of 10, like, that seems a little off, right? And not sustainable. But what is sustainable is just putting your head down and being in flow with all the 10,000 voices, and including the ones that we just went through, including fear, of course, and including the part of you that wants nothing to do with those projects that are about decluttering your house. Just be in flow with them all, accept them all, trust them all, have confidence in them all. And one day you wake up and the confidence is just there. That has been my experience. And it's true confidence. That's the other leg. And with these two legs, you can walk very far. Anybody have anything else they want to share or ask? All right, I will finish with boundary setting. This is something else that I've kind of taken in the last month that I thought would be interesting to share, speaking of confidence, because it's tied into it. So setting boundaries, a lot of people have a hard time setting boundaries and knowing when to say no and knowing when to say yes. And the two things that struck me about boundaries is that if you're good at setting boundaries, you know, it's tied in with confidence. Of course, you have to have the confidence to do it. It shows self-respect. You know, like, I respect my time. I respect my energy. You know, I'm unwilling to be around toxic people, for example. That shows self-respect. You set boundaries against toxic people. Now, here's the second part that I heard that really I loved, and I wrote it down, and it's everywhere, you know, in my house now. How you decide what your boundaries are is you only put your energy where it matters. You only put your energy where it matters. And so translating that for me as what I do for a living, like, I have clients that come to me and they're like, I'm really, really ready. And then I'll start facilitating them, and it's clear that they're not. And it's not fun for me. Like, a classic example of this is somebody that writes me and says, my 15-year-old kid has an anxiety disorder. Can you help him? And I say, well, is he willing to pay some of his fee? Or is he the one that's choosing it? Or are you trying to get him to do it and you're paying for it and all that? And they're like, well, we just want him to do it. And the few times that I've said, okay, I'll do it. And even though he's not all in, it's just, it was putting my energy a place that didn't matter. Wasn't going to help him. He was checked out. And I had to give the parents their money back, like, in these circumstances. It's like, a boundary for me is that I will no longer do that. You know, the kid has to earn his sessions with me, so that I know that I'm going to be putting my energy somewhere where it truly matters. This is with adults too. You know, like, I'm being more selective on the clients that I work with privately, because I only want to put my energy where it matters, because it shows self-respect for me to have boundaries. And can you see also that it requires a lot of confidence? So how about you? Let's finish with this. Can you give me some examples of you having the confidence enough to have a boundary that shows self-respect and helps you put your energy only where it matters? Looking for examples. Should I randomly choose someone?
I can say something.
Go ahead, Ed.
Well, setting boundaries is very useful when you work with teams. I know people sort of, you know, try to, you know, drive ships. And I mean, if you don't, like, set a boundary there, then they'll run the ship into some type of shore, and then it's, like, much harder to get out of that. So yeah, by setting boundaries, I mean, you listen to what is being said, but I mean, if what, you know, is being These people are just, trying to, drive everything, then, it's not like teamwork. And you have to set the boundary that, they have to, keep it like a team. Otherwise, it's no good. So that's my first example.
How is it received? Is it received well, or people upset when you do that?
Well, I know that there is resistance, and sometimes, there are those who, try to, make these counter arguments, and then, you got to sort of hold your own and, kind of make it so that, eventually it's more cohesive as a team. You're not going to get like cooperation at the beginning. You're just going to have to keep working at it. I mean, that's been my experience, especially with strong personalities. It's how it goes.
It's easier if you're the boss.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, if you're the boss, then you have to, assert yourself as well.
Yeah. And when we set boundaries, always, everything I interpret through the filter of core values, because you want to make sure that you set boundaries that protect what matters most to you. And they want to set boundaries to protect what matters most to them. It's like you want to put your energy where it matters, but what matters to you is different from what matters to them. And they want to put energy where it matters to them, and they may be fighting for what matters to them. And so when you I like the term stay in your own lane. When you're in a collaboration with other people, it's a dance, isn't it? You're setting boundaries,
sure.
You're setting boundaries. It's like at some point, something has to overlap, because you have to work together. How does that relate to confidence for you, Ed?
Well, when you're confident, you sort of, stick to the points that represent your values, which is, cooperation and getting to the end goal. That's confidence, in my opinion. You try to, reflect on, where, your energy is led to, which is, just trying to get the best result with the least aggravation possible. Sometimes that's more of a logical brain mindset, but it works at times. So that's sort of my idea of confidence, trying to move forward and, you have to, just keep, being persistent. That's my idea of confidence when you work with groups, especially, and, people have different feelings. They want to drive the ship, and you just want to steer it straight.
This is making aha's pop up for me like crazy regarding core values, because I'm listening to you talk and your core values are probably along the lines of cooperation, end goal, persistence, leadership. And if you come in contact with your cooperation core value and you set parameters, right, or boundaries, and somebody's core value is autonomy, then they're going to be setting their boundaries as well. Or if yours is end goal and their core value is this moment, that's going to be problematic. If yours is leadership and theirs is leadership, then that is going to come in conflict too. And you're going to have a lot of confidence about your boundary setting and all the things that you say matter to you. And they're going to have a lot of confidence in boundary setting about what matters to them. And we can see that conflicts arise. And I don't know what to say about that. Maybe this is a subject that we can explore next month as well. you know, boundary setting, like how do you do this in a, I guess, clever way, especially if you're trying to get along with other people, because boundaries are always about, I mean, other people, maybe about dogs too, right? But usually we're talking about other people. And I mean, sometimes having a, being a Zen master with regard to boundaries is not just setting your own, but respecting others as well. And acquiescing that sometimes it's not all about you and your boundary setting, but understanding why if it's causing pain or anguish or pushback from somebody else, the ability to drop off your boundaries and then go into their room and respect their boundaries and try to understand them more. I can see that the Buddha would have done that. And so that is something that we probably hope for as well.
Sure.
Whenever I try to answer a question, and this is the last thing I'll say before we say goodbye, I always go into the inside of the question. I imagine what my teacher would say. I imagine what the Buddha would answer. Like I try to just be the Buddha. I'm not the Buddha, but I am. We all are, right? And a lot of times this work is just about recognizing that we are all the Buddha, that we are all Mahavairochana Buddha, the one who gives birth to Buddhas. And I'm just the one facilitating it, but we're all doing this together. And I love your questions. Please keep submitting them. And let's just end with a moment of feeling again, feeling into the experience of the last hour and 15 minutes. And just letting, it's like when you have a glass of water that you poured and there's bubbles in it and it's cloudy, you know, we just let the glass settle and then everything becomes clear. Now, 30 seconds. And thank you, I bow to you. You know my saying, the shit show in me recognizes the shit show in you, and together we are one. Talk to you guys next month.
Thank you.